Ready for a deep dive?
Always.
This one takes us all the way to Finland,
Oh, cool.
specifically the Satakunta region.
Okay.
They're really making waves with their commitment to a sustainable future.
I've heard good things.
We found this fascinating article. It summarizes a whole seminar on
Nice.
this very topic.
Okay.
It's called Towards a Sustainable and Just Transition in Satakunta.
Catchy.
And it is packed with insights,
Cool.
which I think will get you thinking no matter where you live.
I'm sure.
So what's really interesting here is that Satakunta isn't just aiming for any kind of green transition. They're really focused on making it a just transition. And that just adds a whole other layer of complexity, which is exactly what this seminar unpacked.
Sounds fascinating.
So let's dive into that.
Sure.
What exactly does a just transition entail,
Well,
and why is it so crucial in this context?
it's about recognizing that going green isn't just about swapping out technologies. It's about people, their livelihoods, their communities, their sense of place. Professor Lasse Piltonen, who presented at the seminar, really hit on this, arguing that these transitions can actually spark conflict if they're not handled carefully.
So he used the example of wind power development in Satakunta, right?
Exactly.
Which on the surface seems like a straightforward win for clean energy.
You would think so,
But his research digs deeper and reveals that large-scale implementation of wind farms can actually create tension.
Yeah, think about the visual impact on the landscape or the potential disruption to long-standing industries like forestry and agriculture. These are real concerns for people, for the people who live and work in those areas.
So then how do you balance
Well,
the need for renewable energy
what?
with the potential disruption to existing ways of life?
Yeah, that's the question, isn't it?
It seems like such a delicate tightrope walk.
It is. And Peltonen's work suggests that a key part of the solution lies in inclusive decision-making, bringing local communities to the table early in the planning process, actively listening to their concerns, and making them feel like they have a genuine voice. That's what can make a transition feel just.
It makes me think of that saying, nothing about us without us.
Exactly.
It's not about imposing change, it's about co-creating it.
Precisely. And this principle applies way beyond wind power or even Finland. Think about any major shift, whether it's in infrastructure, technology, even social policies. If we want people to embrace change, they need to feel like they're part of the process.
That's such a crucial point.
It is.
Now, another big theme that emerged from the seminar was this concept of natural capital and ecosystem services. And I'll admit, these terms sound a bit academic,
They do.
but the way they were presented made me realize just how relevant they are to all of us.
I'm so glad you brought this up. Researcher Anu Lehtimäki-Uotila from the Finnish Environment Institute gave a really compelling talk on this, arguing that we need to move beyond seeing nature simply as something beautiful to admire. We have to recognize the tangible value it provides, both economically and socially.
So break it down for us.
Sure.
What exactly is natural capital?
Think of it as the stock of assets we have in the natural world: forests, water, soil, biodiversity, all of it. Now, these assets provide us with a continuous flow of benefits, and those are what we call ecosystem services: clean air and water, pollination for our crops, carbon storage to regulate the climate, even the recreational opportunities that nature offers. These are all services we get for free, courtesy of a healthy planet.
It's like nature is this incredible unseen workforce that's constantly working to keep us alive and well, but we rarely stop to appreciate it, let alone put a price tag on its services. So what Lehtimäki-Uotila emphasizes is that we need to start factoring these services into our decision making, because when we ignore them, we end up degrading the environment, which ultimately hurts our economies and our well-being.
It all comes back
And
around.
she brought up a very specific example
She did.
from Satakunta to illustrate this point, something about water pollution.
Water pollution, particularly from agricultural runoff, is a major issue in the region. And it's not just an environmental problem. It has real economic consequences.
Like what?
Property values decline when waterways become polluted. Tourism suffers. Recreational opportunities are lost.
It suddenly becomes very personal when you realize that enjoying a day at the lake,
right,
or even the value of your home,
exactly,
is directly linked to the health of the ecosystem.
It is.
And here's the thing.
Yeah.
Even if you live in a bustling city,
mm-hmm,
far from any pristine lakes or forests,
uh-huh,
your quality of life,
yeah,
the food you eat,
yeah,
the air you breathe,
exactly,
it's all connected to the health of natural systems.
We're all reliant on these ecosystem services, whether we realize it or not.
Wow. That really puts things in perspective.
I know.
But it sounds like Satakunta isn't just sitting around lamenting these issues.
No.
They're actively searching for solutions.
They are.
And universities seem to be playing a key role in that.
You're right. The seminar highlighted how universities are stepping up as hubs for innovation.
Okay.
And sustainable development.
And they highlighted the Turku School of Economics in Pori, right?
Yes, in particular.
What's so special about what they're doing?
Well, they're going beyond just research and theory.
Okay.
They're working directly with businesses to develop sustainable business models.
Oh, wow.
They're even looking at how technologies like AI and robotics can be harnessed,
wow,
to support the green transition.
So they're bridging the gap between academia and the real world,
yeah,
making sure that innovative ideas actually translate into tangible actions.
That's exactly it. And this kind of collaboration,
yeah,
between universities, businesses, and the wider community,
yeah,
seems to be a defining feature of Satakunta's approach.
I'm sensing a pattern here.
Go on.
A lot of what we've been talking about comes back to the power of collaboration,
mm-hmm,
and the need to break down silos.
You're absolutely right. And that's a lesson that any region or community can learn from.
Okay.
It's not about working in isolation.
Right.
It's about recognizing that we're all in this together.
Yeah.
And we need to pool our knowledge, our resources, and our creativity,
mm-hmm,
to navigate this complex transition,
yeah,
to a sustainable future. And we're back diving deeper into Satakunta's journey,
yeah,
towards a sustainable future.
It's been really eye-opening to explore how they're kind of weaving together,
yeah,
so many different aspects of sustainability, going way beyond just focusing on renewable energy,
yeah,
or reducing emissions.
It's really impressive.
It's like they're creating this whole ecosystem for change.
Right.
One where environmental, economic, and social goals,
yeah,
are all intertwined.
They are.
But I'm curious.
Yeah.
We've talked a lot about the Nivi for collaboration,
uh-huh,
and innovation.
Yeah.
But how do you actually make that happen in the real world?
That is the question, isn't it?
How do you get everyone on board,
right,
and rowing in the same direction?
Well, there's no magic formula.
Okay.
But one thing that really stood out from this seminar,
yeah,
was this emphasis on leadership and vision.
So it's not just about having good ideas.
No.
It's about having someone who can champion those ideas,
yeah,
inspire others to see the potential,
mm-hmm,
and then rally everyone around a shared goal.
Exactly. And it's not just about politicians or CEOs either.
Oh, okay.
It's about leaders emerging from all corners of the community.
Okay.
From businesses, from universities,
yeah,
from grassroots organizations.
So really from anywhere.
Yeah. People, yeah, who can bridge divides, build coalitions.
Uh-huh. Create momentum for change.
It's like that saying, leadership is not about a title or a designation.
Yeah.
It's about impact, influence, and inspiration.
I love that.
And Satakunta seems to be fortunate.
They do.
To have a number of these visionary leaders.
They do.
Who are really kind of pushing the boundaries,
yeah,
of what's possible.
Yeah, people who understand that a sustainable future requires a fundamental shift in thinking.
Yeah.
A willingness to break free from those traditional silos,
uh-huh,
that often keep us stuck in old ways of doing things.
That reminds me of something else that really struck me about this seminar.
Yeah.
It wasn't just about individual projects or initiatives.
Uh-huh.
It was about fostering a more systemic approach to change.
You're absolutely right.
Yeah.
And one of the key takeaways there was the importance of cross-sector collaboration.
Okay.
It's not enough for just the energy sector to go green.
Yeah.
If agriculture and industry are lagging behind.
So it's about seeing the interconnectedness of everything.
Recognizing that the choices we make in one area have ripple effects,
uh-huh,
across the whole system.
Exactly. And that requires bringing together diverse perspectives.
Yeah.
Fostering a culture of open communication and knowledge sharing.
It's like creating a web of interconnected solutions.
Yeah.
Where different actors can learn from each other,
uh-huh,
and support each other's efforts.
That's a great analogy. And Satakunta seems to be actively creating,
yeah,
the conditions for this kind of collaborative ecosystem,
mm-hmm,
to flourish.
Okay.
They've established platforms for dialogue,
uh-huh,
for partnership building,
okay,
bringing together businesses, researchers, policymakers, and local communities to co-create solutions.
Which circles back to what we were talking about earlier. The importance of involving local communities in the decision-making process.
It's crucial.
It's not just about top-down directives. Right. It's about harnessing the wisdom and lived experiences of the people who are most directly affected by these transitions.
Absolutely. Recognizing that local communities have invaluable knowledge and insights to offer.
Right.
I mean, they're the ones who live and work in these places.
Right.
So they're often best equipped to identify potential challenges and come up with solutions that are tailored to the specific context.
It's like tapping into the collective intelligence of the community.
Yeah.
Recognizing that everyone has something valuable to contribute.
Exactly. And that's where universities can play such a vital role.
Okay.
They can act as facilitators, as knowledge brokers, connecting different stakeholders, translating research into action, helping to build capacity within communities.
So it's not just about universities being ivory towers of research.
Yeah.
It's about them being actively engaged
in
supporting the transition on the ground.
Exactly. And it's not just the big prestigious universities either.
Right. We talked about how the Turku School of Economics in Port UCA is really stepping up in this regard.
They are.
Yeah.
Regional universities have a crucial role to play
in
driving sustainable development in their local areas.
Yeah.
They have deep roots in the community, a keen understanding of the specific challenges and opportunities that exist, and a strong commitment to making a positive impact.
This is all starting to make me realize that there's no one-size-fits-all solution.
There isn't.
When it comes to sustainability.
Right.
It's about finding the right mix of approaches.
Yeah.
Tailoring them to the specific context and constantly adapting and evolving as new challenges and opportunities arise.
I couldn't agree more. And this idea of adaptability is really at the heart of resilience.
Okay, let's dig a little deeper into that.
Sure.
We've established that resilience is about building systems that can weather storms and bounce back from setbacks.
Yeah.
But how do we actually do that? What are some concrete steps that communities can take to increase their resilience in the face of these complex transitions?
One of the key insights from the seminar was that resilience is not just about physical infrastructure or technological solutions.
Right.
It's also about investing in social capital.
So things like strong social networks.
Yeah.
Community cohesion.
Uh-huh.
A sense of shared purpose.
Right.
These are all part of the resilience equation.
Absolutely, because when people feel connected to each other, when they trust their neighbors and their local institutions, they're much better equipped to cope with change, to support each other through difficult times, and to work together to find solutions.
It's like that saying, it takes a village.
It does.
Resilience is not just about individual strength.
No.
It's about the strength of the collective.
And that's why things like education, training, skills development are so important.
Okay.
When people have the knowledge and skills they need to adapt to a changing economy, they're more confident, more empowered, more likely to embrace new opportunities.
It's about giving people the tools they need to not just survive.
Right.
But to thrive in this new landscape.
Precisely. And it's not just about technical skills either.
Oh, okay.
It's about things like critical thinking, problem solving, creativity, and the ability to collaborate effectively.
These are the skills that will enable people to be agents of change.
Yes.
To shape their own futures and to contribute to building a more sustainable and resilient society.
And that brings us to another crucial aspect of resilience, which is having strong institutions that are responsive to the needs of the community, institutions that are transparent, accountable, and committed to serving the common good.
So it's not just about individual empowerment.
Right.
It's also about having systems in place that support and amplify those individual efforts.
Exactly. And it's about having institutions that are willing to experiment, to learn from their mistakes, to constantly adapt to the evolving needs of the community.
It's about creating a culture of continuous improvement.
Yeah.
Where failure is not seen as a setback, but as an opportunity to learn, and grow.
And that's where Satakunda's example is so inspiring.
Yeah.
They're not afraid to try new things.
Okay.
To push the boundaries, challenge the status quo.
Mm-hmm.
And they're doing it all in a way that's deeply rooted in their local context.
Okay.
Drawing on their unique history, culture, and natural resources.
It's like they're showing us that sustainability is not just a set of abstract principles or global targets. It's about finding solutions that work for this place, for these people, for this moment in time.
And that's a message that I think resonates far beyond the borders of Finland.
Yeah.
It's a reminder that we all have the power to create positive change in our own communities, to build a more sustainable and resilient future, one step at a time.
This is all starting to feel incredibly hopeful.
It is.
But I think we need to acknowledge that there will be obstacles along the way.
Oh, of course.
These transitions are going to be messy.
Yeah.
They're going to be complex.
Uh-huh.
And they're going to require us to rethink many of our deeply held assumptions about how the world works.
They are. And one of the biggest challenges we face is overcoming the inertia of the status quo. There will be vested interests that resist change.
Right.
There will be fears and uncertainties to navigate.
Yeah.
And there will be moments when progress feels frustratingly slow.
So how do we stay motivated?
That's a good question.
How do we keep the momentum going?
Yeah.
Especially when the path ahead feels uncertain and daunting.
That's where the power of storytelling comes in.
Right.
Stories have this ability to connect us to a larger purpose, to inspire us to act, and to help us see the possibility of a better future.
So it's not just about data and statistics. It's about sharing the stories of people who are already making a difference.
Yes.
Showcasing the innovative solutions that are emerging.
Uh-huh.
Painting a vivid picture of what a sustainable future could look like.
Exactly. Because when we can see and feel the possibility of a better future, we're more likely to believe that it's achievable.
Okay.
And we're more likely to be willing to put in the hard work to make it happen.
This is making me think about the role that the media plays in all of this.
Mm-hmm.
Because if we're constantly bombarded with stories of doom and gloom, it's easy to feel overwhelmed and powerless.
It is. But if we start to highlight the positive stories, the stories of resilience and innovation, then we can shift the narrative and create a sense of hope and possibility.
And it's not just about traditional media either.
No.
Social media, community platforms,
even
just conversations around the dinner table.
Yes.
These are all powerful channels for sharing stories and inspiring action.
So it's about reclaiming the narrative.
Yes.
Amplifying the voices of those who are working towards a more sustainable future.
Yeah.
And showing that change is possible, even in the face of seemingly insurmountable challenges.
Precisely. And that's why I'm so excited about what's happening in Satakunda.
Me too.
Because they're not just talking about sustainability.
Yeah.
They're living it.
They are.
They're demonstrating that it's possible to create a more just, equitable, and sustainable society.
They are.
And they're inspiring others to follow in their footsteps.
That's what's so important.
I have to say, I'm starting to feel a little bit envious of our listener who's diving deep into all of this.
Right.
But for those of us who aren't lucky enough to be in Finland right now, there's still a lot we can learn.
Oh, absolutely.
From Satakunda's experience.
One of the most valuable lessons.
Yeah.
Is that sustainability is not a destination. It's a journey. It's about constantly learning, adapting, and collaborating to create a better future for ourselves.
Yeah.
And for generations to come.
And it's a journey that we can all embark on.
We can.
No matter where we live or what our circumstances are.
Exactly.
But I think we need to give our listeners a moment to catch their breath.
Okay.
And process all of this amazing information.
It is a lot.
We've covered so much ground.
We have.
And I know I'm feeling a bit overwhelmed in the best possible way.
I hear you. It's a lot to take in, but it's also incredibly inspiring.
Yeah.
So let's take a quick pause here.
Okay.
And when we come back, we'll wrap up our exploration of Satakunda's journey.
Okay.
And distill some key takeaways
that
our listeners can apply to their own lives and communities.
And we're back, wrapping up our journey to Satakunda.
It's been a whirlwind.
We've been exploring their approach to building a sustainable future.
It's impressive, very forward thinking.
It has been quite a deep dive.
It has.
Full of inspiring ideas and concepts that really get you thinking.
I'm still processing some of it, to be honest.
I think what struck me the most is how they're not just focusing on like technological mm-hmm. solutions
right.
or policy changes.
It's so much more than that.
They're really emphasizing the human element of this whole transition.
That's what makes it so unique, I think.
You're really hitting on something important there.
Am I?
Yeah, because ultimately sustainability isn't just about numbers
right.
and targets.
No, it's about people.
It's about creating a world where people can thrive
exactly
in harmony with the planet.
That's the goal.
And that requires us to address the social and economic dimensions of sustainability alongside the environmental ones.
They can't be separated.
It's about ensuring that no one is left behind.
Yes,
isn't it? In this transition.
A just transition.
Yeah, that everyone has the opportunity to benefit from a more sustainable future.
It has to be for everyone, not just a select few.
Exactly. And that's where this whole concept of a just transition comes into play.
I'm so glad you keep bringing this up.
It's something we talked about earlier.
So it's so crucial.
But it bears repeating.
It does.
It's about making sure that this shift to a green economy is fair.
Yes.
And equitable.
Uh-huh.
That it creates opportunities for all.
Right.
And that it doesn't disproportionately burden those who are already marginalized or vulnerable.
It's about lifting everyone up.
It's about recognizing that there will be winners and losers.
Unfortunately, that's true.
In any major transition.
Yeah.
And that we have a responsibility to support those.
We do.
Who might be negatively impacted.
Absolutely.
Whether that's through retraining programs, social safety nets, or other forms of support.
Whatever it takes.
And it's about ensuring that those who are most affected by climate change.
Right.
And environmental degradation.
Who are often the most vulnerable.
Yeah, have a voice.
That's key.
In shaping the solution.
Yeah. It can't be a top-down approach.
This all speaks to the importance of.
Of what?
Inclusive decision-making.
Yes.
Bringing everyone to the table.
Everyone.
And making sure that diverse perspectives are heard and considered.
Yeah, we need all the ideas, all the voices.
And it's not just about top-down decision-making either.
Oh, definitely not.
We've seen how grassroots initiatives and community-led projects
so important.
Can be incredibly powerful drivers of change.
I've seen it firsthand.
Especially when they're supported by strong partnerships.
That's crucial.
Between local government, businesses, and civil society organizations.
It's about collaboration on every level.
Absolutely. Sadakunta's experience really highlights the importance of fostering this strong ecosystem for sustainability.
It takes an ecosystem.
Where different actors can collaborate, share knowledge, support each other's efforts.
It's inspiring to see it in action.
It's like creating a web of interconnected solutions where each strand reinforces the others.
Yeah.
Creating a more resilient and adaptable system overall.
We need more of that in the world.
And it's about recognizing that sustainability is not a one-size-fits-all solution.
Right.
What works in Sadakunta might not work exactly the same way.
It won't.
In another region or community.
Each place has its own unique set of circumstances.
Opportunities.
It's about adapting these principles and approaches to the specific context.
Taking into account those unique challenges and opportunities of each place.
It's about being flexible.
And it's about embracing a spirit of experimentation.
Yes.
Continuous learning.
We have so much to learn from each other.
Recognizing that we won't always get it right the first time.
Oh, definitely not.
And that failure is just an opportunity to learn and adapt.
Every failure is a lesson.
That's such a powerful message.
It is.
It's not about striving for perfection.
No.
But about constantly iterating,
evolving
our approach.
As we go along.
As we go along.
That's the key.
And it's about recognizing that sustainability is a journey.
It is.
Not a destination.
A long and winding journey.
It's an ongoing process of transformation.
It is.
And we'll always be learning and adapting along the way.
Always learning.
So as we wrap up this deep dive into Sadakunta's experience.
Yeah.
I'm curious, what's the one key takeaway you hope our listeners will carry with them?
That sustainability is not just a lofty ideal or a distant goal.
Mm-hmm.
It's something we can all contribute to in our own lives and communities.
It's about recognizing that our individual choices, our collective actions,
our willingness to embrace change can make a real difference.
We have more power than we think.
And it's about remembering that we're not alone in this journey.
We're not.
There are people all over the world.
Everywhere.
In communities big and small.
Yes. Working towards a more sustainable future.
And by connecting with each other.
Sharing our stories, supporting each other's efforts.
That's how we create change.
We can amplify our impact.
Exactly.
And create a truly transformative movement.
A global movement.
That's beautifully said.
Thank you.
And I think Seta Kunta's story offers a powerful example.
It does.
Of what's possible when people come together.
With a shared vision.
With a shared vision and a commitment to create a better future.
A better future for all.
So as we leave our listeners to ponder all these insights, I encourage everyone to think about.
To think about what?
The green transitions happening in their own communities.
What can you do?
What are the unique challenges and opportunities you see?
Where can you make a difference?
How can you contribute to creating a more just and sustainable future for all?
We all have a role to play.
And remember.
What's that?
Even small actions can make a big difference.
They can.
When we all work together.
Collective action is key.
So let's be inspired by Seta Kunta's example.
Yes, be inspired.
And embark on our own journeys.
Towards a brighter, more sustainable future.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive.
It's been a pleasure.
Until next time, keep exploring.
Keep learning.
Keep learning and keep striving to make the world a better place.